Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd. I just got off the Meet the Press set where we wrapped up interviews with Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas and Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. I'm sitting here now with Garrett Hake. He's our senior Capitol Hill correspondent at NBC News. So, Garrett, well, what a week.
Yeah.
First. I mean, you know, I joked on Friday. I really didn't think we were getting this ruling on Friday. Mm-hmm. I thought, no. They're going to wait till this is a July 1 right. drop and run for the hills type of ruling. But I joked. I said, yeah, we probably have three shows planned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, could have led with January 6th, but pre-Roe, could have led with 6th, could have led with guns, and then Roe happened.
And we could have done 2 hours today easily.
Absolutely. Sometimes we overrate an impact on something in the moment. So let's have that test, mm-hmm. test ourselves. Mm-hmm. Where will we be in 2 months on the abortion issue?
It's a great question because I think, you know, if you look at it today, I feel like, you know, if you ask Republicans what their top issues are going to be, they're going to talk about the price of gas. And they still think the economy wins out over this. And to me, like, the open question is this the kind of thing that makes Democratic voters so furious they cannot wait to get out of the streets and go to the polls? Or is it the kind of thing that makes them so furious they shut it all off? That this is like, you know, we've talked in the past on the show about kind of voter exhaustion. The Democrats felt like they won when they beat Trump in 2020. This stuff was supposed to be over. And here you have to be furious again. And I don't know if that's sustainable. I really don't.
You know, it's interesting. My thesis is that we're more likely now to head to a high turnout midterm. That it's going to...
There's something for everybody.
Right. This should level-ish the playing field on enthusiasm. The House is still going to be out of reach for the Democrats, I think. I think it makes the Senate closer to a 50-50 coin flip. When you look at the states mm-hmm. at play, I mean, if you were the Democrats and you looked at the states that were in play, you're happy you have this. Because suddenly Nevada and New Hampshire are the two yep. that I'm most – you have woman – incumbents, mm-hmm. male nominee challenge. Well, we don't have the nominee yet in New Hampshire, yeah. but it's yeah. likely mm-hmm. male nominee challenge who are a bit to the right on this issue. Now, I know Nevada has it enshrined, but New Hampshire and Nevada are very pro-choice states.
Yeah,
and it's a tough place to be defending flipping around.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I've actually run the scenarios in my head. There's like three or four different ways you could end up with a differently constituted 50-50 Senate.
But
again,
I think 50-50 is much more in play than we thought even a month ago.
I do too. I mean, Catherine Cortez Masto in Nevada has one of the hardest holds to me. I think it's the most underrated race on the map. It's just really, really challenging.
I would put her behind. I would have said, in fact, I would have favored the Republicans, mm-hmm. but I think Roe changes everything.
Yeah, I think that's a huge help for her. I've never thought New Hampshire was going to be as competitive as other
Hampshire.
Folks have.
But it's New Hampshire. It's one of those, it never matters who's on the ballot sometimes. It is the state. We'll see. Sununu, there might be the
totally
the,
different
the,
story.
The secret. No, but he may be the secret for Hassan.
How so?
Because he's pro-choice.
Oh, that does give her a ton of cover. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's interesting. I mean, but you know, Georgia, like, how is Herschel Walker going to talk about this issue? I mean, that feels like a...
How does Herschel Walker talk about any issue?
I mean, well, that's a fair question. But I mean, this is an opportunity for him to step on a rake, right? Like, we got into this a little bit on the show, but I feel like this changes things more at the margins because voters will punish people more who screw up or who overreach on this issue. Like, how many Todd Akins out there right now that we don't know about who are going to be forced to talk about this issue and blow it?
He was so uncomfortable mm-hmm. with the lack of a rape and incest yeah. exception. Yeah. So what happens when a Republican wants one? Are they a rhino now mm-hmm. in some places? In Missouri, I don't think you could have that position. In some parts of Texas, you can. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people in Dallas that aren't going to like
right.
this. You know, the suburban Republicans of Fort Worth, mm-hmm. you know, what happens there?
Right. This doesn't play in Collin County and it doesn't yeah. play in the Woodlands. I mean, Texas is probably still, I've been saying this, like, it's not there yet for Democrats, I don't think, but it's a huge issue. And, you know, in those diverse cities and suburbs, it's a big problem. I mean, Pennsylvania is the other one that's fascinating to me. Like, how did Dr. Oz and Mastriano run together on a ticket on this issue?
And Dr. Oz, how many times has he probably talked about abortion on his show?
Yeah, well, somebody at American Bridge right now is pulling that tape probably as we speak.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, I think, are the three places that we're all going to be so mm-hmm. curious to see how does this issue play. Mm-hmm. Michigan and Wisconsin with the immediate bans. Yeah. You know,
don't sleep on Arizona, by the way, either. I mean, that's another one I think, you know, doesn't get as much attention as it probably deserves, in part because Kelly is so like under the radar in general, but I think that's another state that you have to watch how this is going to appear.
Well, and this is one where already I think Democrats are trying to figure out, can they use the election stuff, because there's a Republican nominee who wants to be, who's an election denier. Mm-hmm. But there's always been some question of how effective is that? Does abortion make it a little bit easier for them to sort of create try to paint the right as out of touch?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think this is the whole ballgame for Democrats, because Republicans are going to run on the economy. And I think Democrats, if you were to sort of broadly categorize their strategy, it's to just say, like, these guys are nuts, right? Like, to put everybody in a crazy bucket. And you can sort of pick, like, are you unacceptably extreme because of your position on abortion? Are you unacceptably extreme because you refuse to recognize the election results? Or are you associated with somebody in either of those two camps? Guess what? You're in the crazy bucket now. Well, and that's been
John Roberts
strategy here.
How about, so basically they're more radical. You could hear the ads, more radical than John Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
John Roberts didn't want to overturn Roe.
Right.
Why did so-and-so, right? Like, you could see Roberts becoming the new Mitt Romney, if you will, of where Democrats start seeing him as a positive foil against Republicans.
Which is, would have been unfathomable five or six years ago. But I mean, it shows you how far the courts moved away from his control, which will be a subject in our third hour today.
So AOC came on. Mm-hmm. She's one of the things she was focused on. And I thought it was fascinating that Joe Manchin used the phrase under oath in his release. Mm-hmm. It's another way of saying he believes Kavanaugh lied to him.
Yeah.
100%. That's what he's saying. You know, right? He is, you know, not beating around the bush. She thinks that ought to be investigated.
Yeah. I'm making the like human shrug emoji here.
I mean, I hear you, but is Jerry Nadler politically need to get caught trying? Doesn't he?
I mean, that's a good question. Yeah. Well, look, and we've talked about this before, too. I mean, the constitution of the judiciary committees in both chambers are your party's most partisan members on these kinds of things. There's probably a whole lot of Democrats that would like to get caught trying investigating, you know, potentially lying under oath. But good luck proving it. And by the way, I think, that plays just as well on the other side. Like, if you're trying to tell your base you're continuing this fight, I think there's just as many Republicans in the House Judiciary Committee who'd like to have that fight, too. It also speaks to me how limited the options are for congressional Democrats to do anything here. I mean, not just because of the filibuster, but because of, you know, the limits of a state-based issue here. Like, we're going to see a couple of hearings in the Senate coming up to try to keep this issue front and center. But congressional Democrats' hands are really tied.
So I'm looking for a headline here. I was really intrigued by a headline that John Cornyn sent out about, here's what it was, after the president signed the gun regulation bill. Cornyn's mental health and school safety bill signed into law.
Yeah.
I was looking for the word guns.
Yeah, you're not going to find it.
Anywhere, the word guns. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, gun owners. Okay,
yeah.
No. Look, I think we get what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Did he lose any support in the Republican conference for what he did here?
I don't think so.
Okay.
He presented behind the scenes, I guess it was on Tuesday, polling that was done specifically of gun owners on these issues in this framework. And every position was like 80% plus in favor. And I think that was enough that even the people who weren't going to ever vote for this, and it was still a minority, not even a plurality of Republican senators voted in favor of this framework. But you didn't see anybody out on television going after Cornyn. You don't see a bunch of background quotes from other senators saying that he did the wrong thing here. I think the having the imprimatur of Mitch McConnell to go have these negotiations in the first place provided him a lot of cover. And I think he's probably going to be fine. I mean, he's also just got reelected. You know, he's got a far more contentious partner in the Senate from Texas that can take a lot of heat on anything else. Cornyn's not staying up at night over this.
I made note of John Barrasso's no vote.
Mm-hmm. And John Thunes.
That's right.
Of the GOP Johns. You know, there's one guy doing a deal here and two who are going to oppose it. And I don't think it talks about their state politics are pretty consistent across the board here. But I think it does tell you how they're going to divide themselves on leadership politics in the future.
What's the what do you think the January 6th committee has left in their bombshell arsenal?
I think what is going to be most compelling from them is what Donald Trump was doing on the day of January 6th. It's really the only unanswered question, frankly, to me, since we've started talking about this.
They have a great witness. They have a person in the room.
Yeah.
And Cassidy Hutchins.
They do.
The aide to Meadows. I mean, I think that we're good, that she's providing a lot of information about that.
Brendan, people just heard her name and got introduced to her on Thursday as the person who was, you know, ticking through the names of Republican congressmen who asked for pardons. To me, that's like, having covered the second impeachment and having covered January 6th since January 6th, the biggest unanswered question has always been, what did Donald Trump do when he went into the little dining room off the Oval Office and closed the door? Like, what did he do for that time period? And it's never been answered to my satisfaction. And to me, if the committee has the goods on something else that we haven't heard yet, and I thought Thursday's hearing was very compelling, that's where it's going to come.
All right. It's Sunday night, and we are in a, you know, I'm NBA'd out. Mm-hmm. I followed the draft a little bit just because I got a son who's way into the NBA.
So yeah.
You'll get there. Sometimes you'll have to end up having to follow sports mm-hmm. you didn't think mm-hmm. you were going to follow. But, you know, sport, we're in that light sports moment, which means we got to binge other stuff. Yep. You and I, we're going to, apparently we disagree about the season finale of Obi-Wan.
Yeah. So I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, and I really wanted to like that show from the get-go.
I'm with you there.
I liked the first episode. I was into the premise. I liked Kid Leia. I was into the whole thing. I was really frustrated by wimpy loser Obi-Wan for like 5 out of the 6 episodes. The like Jedi who had lost his way and hemming and hawing about everything. I just thought it didn't set up, like the whole time I was watching the show, I was thinking about Darth Vader in A New Hope saying, when we last met, I was but the learner. Now I am the master. And then he was sort of scared of Obi-Wan.
Right.
And it's like, this guy?
Yeah.
It just didn't do it for me.
So
until the last episode.
So you love the last. So I am just the opposite. I loved the first 5 episodes and thought the last episode, spoiler alert, blah, 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 fast forward through. I feel like they had an interesting idea and mm-hmm. they went, OS, we've got to make sure this leads you right into Star Wars 4, right? The actual real Star Wars. Uh-huh. But anyway, for A New Hope. And all of a sudden, it's like this last episode jammed in just enough so that you knew. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of things in the last episode that just didn't feel correct. So why didn't you talked about Obi-Wan being mm-hmm. a badass. Okay. Why didn't he take him out?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, he's sitting right there.
I know.
You already knew. You failed to take him out
right.
when he was burning, and you have another chance to take him out. You needed
some more plot armor there. You needed something to prevent him from doing what seemed like correct. The obvious
How
thing.
Do you know? And he walks away?
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
And it even has the line, too, where it's like, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker, I did. I'm like, oh, okay.
So, that was cool. Yeah, all right. That's right. He was giving him permission to do it.
Right.
And then the other bizarre aspect of this is I don't buy the idea that Darth Vader is so single-mindedly focused on him.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that Darth Vader sort of has, you know, he's obsessed with his kids. He's obsessed with getting Leia and Luke mm-hmm. during the – but I didn't find that – anyway, I just found the whole last episode. And by the way –
the Inquisitor plotline just kind of fizzled too there.
What happened to her?
Like,
Where is she? Is she going to be – I liked her. Mm-hmm. Are they going to bring her, the Inquisitor, back? Is she
dead?
It didn't
feel like they left that open-ended, right? Like, we've created a character here that might
get her own
show? Might get a spinoff.
Maybe mm-hmm. she gets a show. And I think Kid Leia was 3 years too young.
All right. That's fair. I don't know. I thought she was good.
She didn't look 10. She looks 7 or 8 to me. That was my problem.
Well, that's a casting issue. I mean, whatever. Yeah. I was fine with that. I mean, that didn't bother me as much.
Did young Luke ever speak?
I don't think so. Isn't no, he weird? Said like one line when they were locking him in the room, but I think there at
it
the
was
end.
Fascinating. He was all young Luke sitting there a lot in the last 10, 15 minutes. He never says a word.
That feels like a whole spinoff series too, like the adventures of young Luke Skywalker. I don't know. I've been pretty down
way,
on Obi-Wan, most Star Wars properties.
By the way, Obi-Wan has 8 years mm-hmm. to go really gray and look like Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough.
He's going to live in that cave. I mean, he walked off with the ghost of Qui-Gon. Okay, spoilers over. We can talk about something else.
And I'll give him one. Uncle Owen. That was good casting.
Man.
He looks just like
so
Owen.
So good. Yeah. That, like,
that I give him
that
credit.
Threw me a little bit.
Uncle Owen is way too good. Way too well
Did you catch the other Easter egg? It didn't occur to
we
me until the very end.
All such dorks here. Elias must love
it. The other Easter egg with the toy speeder. That he's trying to give Luke in the first episode, and he ends up bringing.
The toy
remember
speeder.
When Luke and they're sitting in the house in the original Star Wars, he's playing with that speeder.
Thing.
It's that speeder, and it kind of clicked for me right there at the end.
Well,
that
I'll
was
tell
an Easter egg.
You, it is something Mrs. Todd and I have decided in the next 48 hours we're going to watch New Hope.
Yeah,
because we're literally just for that first half hour.
Yeah, Mrs. Hank may not know this yet, but that's probably happening in our household too.
Because I do want to see. All right, how well did they connect
this? Did they line it up properly?
All right, so there you have it. He liked the last episode. I didn't. That's what kind of balance you get here on Meet the Press.
You love to see it.
Have a good Sunday.
Thanks, Chuck.